bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Welcome to the photo show with me, Ewan Rankin, because Carl is still out delivering and Alex is working for some rather high-flying individuals who don't want to be named and who won't let him Skype in. And it's just me and Mr. Forsman. How you doing, mate?
Sup?
Oh, I've pressed the wrong button. Yeah, it's fine. It's all right, mate. You?
Better?
No, you're fine. What you been up to, mate?
Just working.
Just working. Yeah. Nothing else.
Writing. Yeah, a little cooking, a little cleaning. That's not really exciting, though.
Yeah, you're a cooker and a cleaner. I'm a love and not a fighter. The week in photography, then. Chris is the photography writer from Ars Technica. I'm a professional photographer, and there's not a lot else happened, really. I mean, that's kind of the highlight of the week's news, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I missed it last week when Nikon announced the 3200 with 24 megapixels.
We thought you might say something about 24 megapixels, mate.
24 megapixels. Well,
unnecessary.
I don't think most people buying a camera like this really need 24 megapixels. I agree. But the one thing I will say is they have literally killed their other 3000 series cameras that are like 12 and 16 megapixels. Who's going to buy that for about the same amount of money?
No.
When you can get 24 for $850.
Well, and the other thing is as well, of course, there's rumors of D600 now.
Yeah.
We're talking, I mean, there's no prices on it or anything, but it's a true replacement, they say, for D700 and D800. So you're going to guess it's coming about the same kind of price. In-camera RAW editor. I don't see the point of that, but okay.
Whatever.
Dual SD card slot, so they've jumped away from the old QXD thing option. And do they need it? With the D800 just coming out and being pretty damn fantastic, do they really need a D600 unless it's going to separate much on price?
I'm telling you, if there's a D600 that comes out tomorrow with basically, you're talking like D4 like ISO range. What is a D4? 16, 20 megapixels? Something much less than 36, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Something in that range, whatever it is, comes out tomorrow for $2,000, I'll buy it tomorrow.
Really?
Cash on the barrelhead. I will switch to Nikon.
Well, what is setting you apart from a D600 from a D800 then?
$1,000.
Right, but that's it. So that's it though.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, are you really of the opinion that Nikon are that stupid that they're going to release a camera that's as good as a D800 but $1,000 cheaper and call it the D600?
It doesn't. But the D800, it doesn't need to be as good as the D800. It needs to be as good as a D700.
So so crappier quality, less money. You're happy just to get the measure of you there. You cheapskate.
But I don't understand why you're saying it's crappier quality.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying is if they're talking about releasing a similar quality to the other two cameras and charging $1,000 less for it, that's commercial suicide, surely.
Is it? I mean, there are people who want 36 megapixels; they'll pay for it. There's plenty of people who don't want it and don't want to have to pay for it.
Okay.
Why not address those needs?
No, fair enough. Okay. What do I know? I'm not a Nikon user. But I wouldn't get to switch to Nikon. I mean, the D800's been interesting. The D600 sounds like it might be nice, although there's not even any leaked specs on it yet, and there's no leaked price either. But as far as DX crop mode, dual SD card slots, built-in time-lapse, and integrated GPS, an in-camera RAW editor really doesn't swing it for me.
Yeah, no. I'll tell you what, though. That little Wi-Fi adapter thing.
Yeah?
They need to cut that crap out and just put it in the camera.
Thank you.
Just put it, right?
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I said. $60 extra for a little thing that makes your camera open all the time to the elements with a little door flap thing on it.
Right. I would just rather pay $60 extra for the camera and have it built in. Although if they build it in, I don't see any reason why they need to charge $60 extra for it.
No, I mean, you're talking about a component there that's less than $5 to purchase in to stick in the camera to start with.
But I'm saying I would pay $50 extra for the camera just to have it built in and not screw around with it. Because it's just smart. I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks or months even.
And anything, I mean, the one thing that you don't want to do is start opening things on your camera, because that's how crap gets in, whether it's water, whether it's dust, anything like that. So those little rubber seals that you've got on the side that you know you have to squeeze open to get your remote triggers in, your flash triggers in, those things all ought to stay shut for as long as possible, as much as possible.
So, agreed.
You know, GPS is an always-on functionality. If you've got this thing, you're out there, you're shooting something constantly, you're going to want to know where you are. I won't remember where I am at the moment, so I'll plug my GPS in. It's a permanent feature. It's got to be a permanent location.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't get that either. Not at all.
You're in 100% agreement, Ewan.
Good God. What a show this is going to be.
Mark the calendar.
Mark the calendar. Where were you when we agreed? Canon has defended the 5D Mark III claims about light leaks and says that it doesn't affect your capture quality. I'm not entirely sure what else they're going to say, though, because they're staring a big old bill in the face here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, isn't the issue that the LED backlight can slightly affect the exposures?
Well, yeah, they're saying it affects the exposure value by 1 to 3 stops, but Canon is saying it doesn't affect the image, it only affects the exposure values. But I can't see how that wouldn't affect it, to be honest.
Yeah, if you're underexposing 3 stops, it's going to affect your image quality. It sounds to me like what they're saying is that the it's not as much as 3 stops. It sounds like that's what they're saying.
Yeah, they're talking about a third of a stop alteration in a dark environment, which won't make any difference. That'll correct with levels. That should correct with levels at a third of a stop.
Yeah.
But have you heard anything anecdotal about whether this has actually happened or not happened? Or
no one I know can even get their hands on one yet. So
still.
Yeah, I mean, this and the D800 too. I mean, they're people want them, and sometimes I wonder why camera companies don't just do an Apple and just have like 100,000 of these things, a million of them already made, ready to go, and they say, hey, here's this new awesome camera, then you can just go down to the store and buy it.
Yeah,
you know,
it'd be nice.
They always pre-announce, sometimes months in advance. Pre-orders sit there for months and months, and then they can't fill the pre-orders because they're trickling out and trickling out.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think the thing is, as well, one of the big parts of this story is the fact that if they are admitting that there's a definite issue with these things, then they're going to have to replace them. And if they've got to replace them, then they're looking at an enormous bill.
Yeah.
Absolutely enormous bill. I can't get my lighting right. Stuff it. I ain't going to be bothered. I'll be Casper the Ghost today and be done with it.
It sounds like it might be something that they can do where you have it, you know, like when they have recalls on cars where they put on a different part or something. It sounds like it's something that could be fixed that way.
Yeah, it's
the don't know if they have to replace them entirely, but I'm sure there's going to be some that are just going to want a replacement, and that's, there's just no way around it. Like, that's, if someone really wants one, you should just give it to them and eat it.
Yeah. Easy job, but it's pulling the camera species. That's the trouble, because the cup is going to be right in the gubbins. There's no way that's going to be on the surface for change. Nikon 6mm lens, which is very rare, has gone on sale last year on eBay for $34,000. It's a 6mm f2.8 fisheye, which is pretty phenomenal in terms of the size. I mean, this thing is enormous. There's a picture of it next to an f5 here, and it's huge. It really is badly huge.
It's 220 degrees. Like, you can't take a picture without getting your feet in it.
Yeah, no, I can't. I mean, that's 180, and that's my limit. this thing's now, or not this thing, because that one went for $34,000, but one has turned up at Gray's of Westminster, and it's on for sale now at $160,000, £100,000. That's a lot of money for a lens.
Mm-hmm.
Huge amount. Would you buy it? Would that make you want to swap to Nikon?
Well, I'd have to. If I had a $160,000 lens and no camera, that'd be ridiculous, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's to the point now where it's just strictly a collector's piece. There are very few people, I think, who have a need for such a lens. Chances are you could probably rent something like that if you really needed it. But I don't think there's many. I don't think there's many of these lenses in circulation. You've got to use like a special tripod to even take a useful picture with it because it has such a wide viewing angle.
Yeah.
The pictures that I saw of this one that's on auction. I mean, it's in pristine mint condition in like the original trunk case it came with and everything. I mean that. I think it's strictly a collector's piece, a historical artifact, even. For those kind of people, there's not really an easy way to put a price on something like that. It's just as much as money as they have to blow. If I had money to blow, yeah, I'd take a stab at trying to get it for sure. But my collector days have long since passed, and I just spend as much as I can to get equipment I can actually use for something. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
Well, here's the obvious question. We've got a picture there now on the front, but I mean, what the hell are you going to use it for? Mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of picture do you really need to see that in?
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't seem to make any sense to me, I'm afraid.
I mean, it almost seems like Nikon made the lens for bragging rights. You know, like, can we do this? Can it even be done? Yes, it can. We're going to show you, 2.8.
Any idea how many of these? Excuse me. Any idea how many of these were actually made?
My understanding is that very few. It's originally from the 70s, I think. So I mean, we're talking the days before even before they were using computers to design the lenses, before they were using automated machines to grind the glass. I mean, this was it took somebody a really long time to make one of these lenses, let alone multiple copies. So
you were saying this is crafted on a blacksmith's anvil?
Pretty much, yeah.
Back when my granddad thought that photography was a newfangled thing. Mm. It's not that good, come on. $160,000, I wouldn't pay that. I really wouldn't pay that. Even for a collector's item, I can't see it even as an investment. I don't see it as any value.
It's not. I wouldn't even say it has value as an investment. Like I said, it's strictly a collector's item, a curiosity, a historical artifact. Even that is the value. And if I, like I said, if I had $160,000 that wasn't being used for anything useful, yeah, I'd consider it. But yeah, beyond that, no, it's not something you're going to take out of the box and use tomorrow for sure.
No, not for that. Definitely not. I wouldn't, and I'm not going to. There we go.
In a glass case.
A new trend has gripped Russia. And we never thought we'd be talking about photography trends in Russia, but it's true. There's a new photography trend in Russia that is called skywalking. And basically, teenagers are getting hold of cameras and taking themselves up to ridiculously high structures and then taking pictures of themselves. Pictures such as this. And this guy is stood on the end of a girder out in the middle of nowhere with his arms out like Jesus over Brazil, over Rio. And he is a long frigging way up here. He could reach up and touch the clouds. And someone's taking a picture of him with a wide angle lens on. And it's a stunning photo. Absolutely stunning photo. But it's their idea of fun. We've just pulled down someone a couple of weeks ago, Chris, from the Shard, which is a building that's being built in the middle of London, which is very, very high. And they were up there having a bit of a lark and taking some pictures and video of themselves hanging off the end and so on. So I got to say, I applaud this. I don't know. If they want to do it, then fine.
Sure. I mean, it's just like anything. I mean, it's like their version of like skateboarding on a 9-foot vert ramp or parkour or whatever. I mean, yeah, they know they can get hurt. They do it anyway. If they get hurt, they get hurt. Who cares?
Yeah. And they take some good camera gear with them, unfortunately. There's one here of them stood on some statue with a bloke with shiny hair and a scroll rolled up, and the girl's lying on the arm that's barely wider than she is, and he stood on top of the locks and the curls. There's another one of a girl stood inside what looks like a kind of gasometer that we'd have here in the UK, but I have no idea what this structure's used for unless it's an old missile silo that they've brought above ground. But it's a framework, effectively. And the thing is, the authorities have left the ladders on the outside of these places. And, you know, an uncontrolled ladder's just screaming, climb me.
Well, here's the thing. You know, before now, people would just do this and not take pictures. But they would climb up there all the time. I mean, kids climb on things. Like, it's like, I don't even understand why it's so bizarre. Nobody gets it. I mean, kids would do this anyway and just not even have pictures. I'd rather have a picture. Like, look, I did this.
What I love about it, I've just shown a picture here of a guy who's stopped halfway up a steel or iron railing climbing up. The bit that he's on and holding onto while he waits while his mate takes the picture, clearly the supports have come away and the whole thing's buckling and ready to fall backwards. His mate's obviously higher than he is. But what I love is the hoops at the bottom. They look like safety hoops. They might be barbed wire, but it looks like a safety hoop further down. And it's like they suddenly stop guarding, like, well, there's no point in guarding from this height because anyone who goes higher than this has got to be really sure-footed or a complete nutter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, and that's the thing that's really interesting about these pictures is the person taking the picture is always higher than the person in the picture.
Yeah. Peter in the chat room says it doesn't look safe to me. No, it doesn't look safe at all. What I love, the fact it's all wavy and wobbly, where some of it's attached and some of it's not, and it's warped and bent. You just want to know what these structures are. I particularly want to know what this one is, because why on earth would you have a cage like that above ground that goes down all the way to the bottom and just hits grass?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. But there you go. I'm old. What do I know? I wouldn't climb that. I wouldn't have climbed that 25 years ago, let alone.
Oh, you know, maybe it's some kind of radio tower or something like that.
Yeah, so I'm sure she's getting RF burns as she's climbing. Damn, my tan's going to be good in the morning. Olympics.
I'm impressed. That's all I'm saying. I'm impressed. Kudos.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I big balls. Absolutely. The Quavers are huge. Last bit of the stories, really. Olympic bosses have said that the Facebook photo ban is absolute bunkum. This is organisers of the 2012 Olympics have put on the tickets or on the conditions that anyone who takes a picture or video inside the stadium can't use it on any social networks. They have actually stated that, but one of the spokespeople for the organisation has come out and said, no, that's not the case. It's low cog. They've come out and said, no, that's not the case. We take your point that it's not written very particularly well, but we're not looking to stop people from posting photographs on social networks. They can still put their stuff up. They just don't want people making any commercial purposes out of them. Is this just to make sure you cover your ass and you've said it in case you want to use it? Or do you actually see them walking around and going, oi, sunshine, camera down?
I can't say for sure, but I just know that you wacky Brits have all these weird rules about when and where you can take pictures. And
no, they're more straightforward than yours are, mate. Bugger off.
I don't know. All I know is that the only time we talk about cops harassing people for taking pictures, it's 99 times out of 100, it's in Britain.
No, we've got problems with security guards walking around and stopping individuals from taking photos. I grant you that.
Right.
But in terms of the police, they don't make a lot of arrests associated with these. There's the odd story that's copped up. But, I mean, we haven't got things like the thing that you guys had in Boston where the guy gets his camera smashed. Ooh,
right.
And,
yeah.
You know, and he's photographing someone else being arrested and videoing it.
Yeah, there's been a lot of... apparently, they've been trying to use, like, wiretapping laws to prevent people from videotaping cops. And usually what happens is somebody's videotaping it because the cop is behaving badly. And I you know, I'm 100% for that. They are officers that work for the public. They are in the public. There's no reason they can't be videotaped or photographed. There's no sound legal reason that it can't be done.
Yeah.
And it should be done. It should be done. If a cop is screwing up, if he's going over the line, You know, he should be accountable in the story.
Well, he's in public. I mean, there's been an awful lot of questions about whether this is legitimate and whether they can or can't do the enforcement. If you're in a public place, you do what you like. There's nothing that anyone can stop you. We got one of the questions today is actually about photography in a public place as well. But, I mean, Teresa in the chat room saying cops are in big trouble in Illinois for that. The cases, the case that went to court was thrown out completely as well. And, and Teresa's also, wouldn't it be really tough to make sure that the people were ejected if they were taking photos? I mean, it's I think I can't see us not getting a YouTube video of Usain Bolt winning the 100 metres, etc. So,
yeah.
Last but by no means least, then, IKEA, that well-known camera manufacturer, has got a
manufacturer
camera.
Manufacturer of all manner of interesting goods made with cheap materials.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you got to say, you know, which body would you suggest would you like you to create a cheap and nasty camera? IKEA's got to be pretty near the top of the list. They have created one. Now, it's actually been created as a disposable camera for another event. It was some press event in Europe for some of their products. But there's suggestions that this thing's going to go on sale. It's got a very simple reset button for getting rid of all the images. It's got a flick out USB that plugs in. It takes around 40 images, but it doesn't say what the resolution is. And all it takes is two of their AA batteries and you're up and running. It can't be any worse than a cell phone camera, surely.
Right.
You think?
I would use one just for fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if this comes out and it's 69p or something like that, you'd buy it in a heartbeat, wouldn't you? Give it the kids. Sure. Off you go, kids. I mean, feasibly speaking as well, this you know, I'd say it lasts forever, but it'll last till the decomposition of the cardboard, either by fruit juice and orange juice or Coke or your kids' hands. But that would be fabulous for a day out for kids, wouldn't it? And if it's I mean, realistically, what sort of price would you say that would be truly a disposable camera?
I'd go as high as like maybe $2 or $3.
Yeah. $2 or $3. That's like about £1.50.
Yeah.
What, £1 to £1.50. I can't see them making that to £1. I have to say. Is it the new Lomo, says Russ?
I mean, I don't know about you, but AA batteries here aren't that cheap either, so.
Yeah. Oh, if it came without batteries at £2, I think that would be a good buy. I would quite happily get two of those with batteries, give them the kids and say, off you go, kids, shoot 40 pictures today. And when they've shot and go, well, there you go, it's done.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And then you got the, yeah, you just poke it with with a pin. Yeah. And then you can shoot 40 more. So, yeah.
My son would have destroyed it just by picking it up. That's butt ugly. Good way of getting rid of your cardboard boxes, says Pete. But I wouldn't use it in the rain, says Ian. Thank you. No, I wouldn't either. So there we go. That's consensus. Chat room, tell us what your price would be to buy that. I mean, if he's saying $2-$3, I'm saying £2 without batteries. With batteries, you'd probably end up paying a fiver for that, I would have said here. But Russ says £1. Yeah, I don't think that's going to be it. Without batteries, maybe. Possibly. But never mind.
I'm assuming $2 or $3 with the batteries included.
I think that's ninepence, says Super Chicken, showing his age. £1 without batteries, says Russ. So that's your $2-$3 with batteries, definitely.
Yeah.
We shall see. This week's six things were the standard six things. So each of us have got to come up with three.
Oh, my goodness.
The subject this week doesn't say who set it, but this week's six things is sports. Six tools, six tricks, and six tips that can prepare you for capturing sporty action. It could either be your kids at school or your dad in a Sunday league football match or something like that. But six tips. Do you want to start us off, mate?
Six tips. You need a long lens.
Yes.
You need a long lens. Got to get one.
You need a fast lens.
Yep.
Because it isn't going to be there long. If you're relying on autofocus on your little compact camera, you're probably going to walk away upset with most of it.
Here's a tip that I'm going to give. It's totally free. But zooms are really convenient, and especially for sports, it's handy because, you know, where you have to stand at the sidelines or wherever you get to stand isn't always going to, you know, you're not always going to be able to control where that is in relation to the action. So zoom can be really handy, but you can get single focal length, longish zooms for a really fair price. Like you can get a 200mm 2.8 fixed focal length lens for a pretty good price. And 9 times out of 10, when you're using a zoom, it's almost always zoomed to the longest focal length anyway.
Yeah.
So don't shy away from a long lens just because it's not a zoom. You know, those all those guys that shoot sports for like the NFL, you know, NASCAR races here in the States, they have those giant white Nikon or Canon, usually Canon, I should say, but here anyway, lenses, and they're fixed focal lengths. And they just do the best they can with what they got. So
I would say my top tip would be buy a $3,000 camera and a $3,000 lens and with a proper sports lens, 270 or something like that, and you'll take some good shots with that.
I'd even suggest, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, you know, get something, a step, not the low end camera, the step up, the mid range camera. Usually you can get the mid range to do like 5-6 frames a second, which is pretty good. And you can get that kind of body for around $1,000.
Yeah.
And then put more of the money in the lens.
Yeah, I do, definitely. I mean, your average body now, I mean, I bought a 600D just to play with a video the other week, and it takes a perfectly good image. I've got no issue with it whatsoever. But 100% ISO 100, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. No problem at all. So, you know, that's £500 over here, £600 on eBay. Go out and spend the rest of the money on lenses, definitely. I would say think about what type of shot you want before you go out. So think about whether you want a tracking shot where you want the subject still. Think about whether you want a blurred shot with the background blurred or not. If you're trying to capture the individual, no movement, you're probably talking about 1/250th, 1/500th of a second. So set it on shutter priority. If you want the background blurred as you track with them, 1/125th, maybe down to 1/180th. Perhaps if you got a steady hand, if you want to get some kind of shot where everything's blurred altogether, 1/60th, you'll get some really interesting effects at 1/60th, even 1/40th. Just mess around, but know what you want beforehand and think about, well, do I want to go aperture priority? Do I want to go shutter priority? Shutter is probably something you'd use more if you weren't controlling. If you had a slower lens, I would have said, and go for something that's deliberately blurred. Whereas when I shoot sport, I'd probably shoot on aperture priority most of the time.
I'm going to say here, there's not really, beyond a longer, fast lens, there's not a whole lot of tools I'd recommend. But I was going to say,
tripod's not going to help.
Yeah.
Unless it's a big, long lens, 400mm, 800mm.
Yeah, you might want a monopod.
Yeah.
To help you prop that thing up, you know. And as we I think we talked about monopods a little bit in a past show, but this is the kind of situation where a monopod would be handy because it helps you steady the lens because it's going to be enormous. But you can just kind of, you know, pick everything up and move, you know, down the sideline or something and then use that monopod to help you prop up the lens. So that might be a tool to consider if you've got a really big lens. And maybe get a couple of an extra memory card or two because you're going to be snapping away and might not realize where you're going to run out of room and wish you could take more pictures. So beyond that, I couldn't really recommend anything as far as equipment's concerned. I mean, can you think of anything?
Well, apparently glitter is something that we've not picked. Teresa in the chat room says one of the things should be glitter. It's a sporting event after all, and the winners would look even nicer with glitter on them.
Was that Teresa or was that Missy? Is Missy in the chat room?
Well, I think that's Missy signed in as Teresa. Oh, yes, and also you need the right shoes. Shoes are very important no matter what, but especially at sporting events where lots of people will see you and when you get run over by one of those players. No, it's not Missy. I'm just channeling Missy. Right, there we go. That's sorted then.
You can see the kind of influence she has. Like, she really resonates with the listeners.
It's almost psychic. Mm-hmm. It's like a Ouija board, a photographic Ouija board. Questions? I didn't know if we do six or not, but that we gave you a lot there. Question one. Hi, guys. Just a quick question from a frustrating matter. When I use autofocus on my compact camera, I get a number of focus points which appear on the screen. These are rarely in alignment with what I wish to shoot or focus on. Is there a way to fix this issue and get selective focusing? All the best, Andy of London. I think that's just the fact that he's on autofocus and letting the camera do it all. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I can't think of any compact camera that I've used recently that has multiple focus points that doesn't have some way of adjusting those.
Mm. I mean, usually if you've got your part press, you can do if there's a roll wheel. If you're on a part press, you can roll the wheel round, and the roll wheel you can either set it to roll the exposure, depending on whether you're on the program setting or aperture priority or shutter priority. You can roll that to change exposure, or sometimes you can roll it to change focal points.
Yeah, I mean, even on a compact camera, usually there's like a dial, or the four-way selector will let you choose the focus point. Now, sometimes if you're in a mode like where everything's pre-programmed, you know, the fully on automatic or auto scene or whatever, those scenes usually it will always do everything for you. So you might need to choose something like, you know, aperture priority or shutter priority, like Ewan mentioned. And then you can go in and tweak the focus settings. But yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to remember what I've got here, because I've had a handful of different cameras, and in all of them you can get in there with the controls in the back of the camera and move around that focus point if you need to or want to.
Yeah, somewhere in the menu there's going to be a spot focusing option, no question. So depending on what type of camera you've got, he hasn't said, unfortunately, but if you go into the menu, there will be an element where you can get it to autofocus, and there'll be a manual focal point that you can shuffle and move around. Certainly there is on DSLRs and on a lot of all compacts. I can't think that you wouldn't be able to get a centered focal point, and that's it. Nothing like focus point. That's nothing.
Pro tip here, if you still have your manual, go into the index and look under focus. See what it says, if you still have it.
Yeah. Question from Russ in the chat room. I've got a photographer DeLorean at the weekend. Any tips? And Ian said, don't let it go faster than 88 miles per hour.
Yeah. or you need to attach a flux capacitor to your camera to keep it in sync with the car.
Which, of course, is real. Absolutely. Cars, yeah. I think cars suffer from either... watch out for thunderstorms. Good point, Teresa. With cars... You want a moody sky. You don't want a blown out grey sky. So if it's raining like it is now and you've got some seriously decent looking thunderclouds around, you'll probably get a really good effect as long as it's stopped raining and as long as you've got some light in there. I'd also take a reflector with your whiteboard. Get a great big sheet of polystyrene or something like that from a builder's yard that's been used for packing, and hold that and get someone to hold it and tilt it so that you can add light to reduce shadow on the underside of the car.
The other thing that's good is to use the golden hours, which is like an hour after sun comes up, or about an hour before it sets.
Yeah,
get the most dramatic lighting, and yeah, the sky looks really cool then. So
if you're going to get in close as well to the chrome, I mean, the chrome's probably not going to be, if there is some, the chrome's not going to be any good based on the age of the car, perhaps. But tin of hairspray is good for chrome. Just layer hairspray on, doesn't damage the finish. And it gets rid of some of the shine off the chrome, stops it blowing out the paintwork.
Mm-hmm.
Question two. Hey, fellas. I see a lot of photos of street scenes, be they scenic architecture or candids, and I was wondering if the crew had any tips for carrying out this sort of urban street photography without feeling like either a muppet or a stalker. I've tried a bit of this photography.
Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here.
But I can't get over that self-conscious feeling when I'm waving a camera about in the middle of a crowd. When to them, there's nothing to photography and usually end up resorting to a standard tourist type shot without any people in it. I'm assuming that feeling would just go away with repetition, but where would I stand with the actual photographic rights? If I'm not selling them, I'm pretty much free to photograph what I want, aren't I? I listened to Ewan's explanation of architectural copyright and it made my nose bleed. Why do things have to be so complicated? Getting permission to photograph buildings sounds nuts to me. When you get started on the heritage guys at Trafalgar Square, I thought you were kidding with that story. Also, it would be kind of defeat the purpose of a candid street shot if I had to ask about taking it, say a homeless guy or something like that. Well, in the UK, for definite, anything that's out in the public area is free game. Anything that can be viewed from a public area without making extra effort is free game.
That's pretty much the same here in the States.
Yeah. I mean, well, the interpretation of law by security guards and police officers is different, but that's the law as it stands at the moment. If you want to get a set of steps to climb up and then photograph someone in their garden, it's all about whether there's an expectation of privacy. Now, if they've got a big high fence, then you getting up to overlook that, even if you're still in a public area, would be a challenge to their expectation of privacy. And you'd probably find you'd be in trouble with the law for that, for just doing it. And also, certainly civilly, they'd have a right to sue you. If someone's in the street, you can shoot anything you like and use it. You can shoot any buildings you like and use it to put it on Flickr, Facebook, that kind of stuff. What you can't do is sell that image. That's the key part. But pretty much, general rule, in the public gaze, then you can do anything as long as you don't sell it. And you can still sell reportage. So if it's a news event of some description, say there's a car crash and you take a picture of the car crash and people are in it, then you can sell that image, that's fine. But what you can't do is sell that image for a car insurers to use as an advertising image. That's all. But it can report, the stuff you can take for reporting is entirely different from advertising. Anything to add from the States? Go on.
Is there distinctions on what you can do as far as like selling something as art versus selling something commercially for advertising or even stock photography?
Yeah, no. If you've taken a picture of a piece of architecture that's distinct, the copyright of that building or the artistic license of that building is the ownership of the architect. So you can't sell a picture of that image for profit as anything technically. So there's near where I live, there's a thing, because they used to build Spitfires around here, there's a big sculpture of three Spitfires, and if I went down and shot that, I'd get some fantastic pictures because it's a really nice piece of sculpture, but there's no way on God's green earth that I could sell that. I could put it on a stock image site, but the chances are they'd want me to have a license for the item, and they also wouldn't let me put it on there as a royalty-free image. It would have to be a licensed image. Now, if I went back and took a general view of the entire area there and that statue's in it, then I could sell that as a royalty-free image because it's something that anyone could see and I'm not featuring the architecture. So it's not that complicated. It sounds worse than it is, but basically, you know, if you've really focused in on something that's not yours to photograph, don't sell it. Common sense. If I built that building, would I want someone taking a picture of it and selling it? I don't think that changes much for the States, does it?
I'm not sure if there's a distinction here. I've just heard discussion along those lines, and I'm not 100% clear on the law here in the States as far as whether it's if you're selling it as art or if you're selling it like commercially in a commercial way. But I've heard people discuss that distinction before.
Right. Okay.
So I was just curious.
Teresa said, if someone gets angry because you take a picture, it might be better to let it go rather than get into a fight. Never. Never back down from a fight, woman. Russ got to drive the DeLorean as well.
Ian was asking if we had any specific tips about the kind of photography that...
Yeah, about Ian Wood. He was
like what kind of equipment, maybe?
Yeah, the question was getting permission and that kind of stuff. The other one was talking about whether he gets, how he feels comfortable with doing it. Mm-hmm. It's your God-given right to shoot in public. I don't know, because that's one of those questions like, I feel so nervous when I do this. Well, if I don't, so I can't empathize as to why he feels nervous. But certainly, you know, exposure would help.
Well, here, I was going to say that typically for street photography, the two common kinds of film cameras that were used were the twin lens reflex, because it had a viewfinder where you look down into the ground glass. So you could hold it at waist level and just look down, and it looks like you're fiddling with a camera. It doesn't look like you're actually taking a picture.
Yeah.
So a lot of people use that for street photography. The other one really common is like a rangefinder, like a Leica style. We don't necessarily have to go out and spend the money on a Leica, but there's plenty of cameras that are that style because they're just much smaller. and just kind of like less obvious than an SLR looks when you're using it. But a lot of digital cameras now have like this articulated screen that you can flip out, kind of twist around, or you can just kind of look down at it.
Yeah, D600 got that. Very useful. Very useful camera.
Yeah, like the Canon G-series cameras have that.
Mm. Yeah, G12.
So, yeah.
Great for filming.
And you could even get like something as old as a G9 used for very little money, you can take some really good pictures with that camera. So,
good one. Next one, question 3. Loving the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Trevor. Quick Photoshop question, if I may. If I take a picture and I haven't got the depth of field that I wanted on the background, and the background is dominating the image, how can I blur the background without getting a halo effect around the foreground items and make sure that the background looks naturally blurred? Thanks, Trev Bowles, Aylesbury.
I'll be honest. I would like to know the answer to this question.
The only thing I would say is that separating front from back is the hardest job in the book. If it's not, again, especially if you're talking about you've shot it against chroma key, then it's significantly easier. But if you're saying that you've shot it against a very detailed background, trying to separate a girl with hair is extremely difficult. There was a tool that I used to have when I had Photoshop 7, and it was called Knockout. And that did a pretty good job. Basically, you drew a line around the outer part of where the hair was, and then you drew a line around the inner part of where the hair was, so that the software identified that as the area where the transition occurred, and it did its best to try and pick out. And if you got a not too complicated background, it would get a single hair out. The other thing is, there's also websites that are in India where you send them a picture and ask them to knock it out, and they'll send you back a PSD with separated, and they charge like £3. It's ridiculously cheap. Far better to do. And the other thing to watch out with, if you're then going to blur the background, once you do get that separation and you haven't got the halo, the thing that people tend to do is they select the whole background and then they just apply a Gaussian blur to it, and that's it. Well, whilst you get an immediate good effect from that, the problem is that that's not the way blur works. Blur is staged. So what you need to do is try and find cutoff points in your background as it moves back where you can loosely separate the image with a feathered separation between the layers, and change of the amount of blur on each of those as it moves away from the camera or moves away from the focal point. One of the big problems, like I say, is just washing it with blur all the way across. Look at the image and try and figure out how you're going to stagger it back to get more and more blur as you get further away from the camera, and that helps it look more natural. But it's tough. I've done it a couple of times and been happy, and I've done it 1,000 times and been disappointed in the extreme and ended up not selling the image or not passing the image on. So, with machines, it's great. I do an awful lot with machines. So doing that kind of thing with machines is great and easy because the fact machines got lovely hard edges most of the time. Separating a grill, everyone's like, oh, separating a grill must be a nightmare. Grills are a piece of cake because the edge of the grill is a hard edge. It's whether the complicated background. But look for that step backwards to change your blurs percentages. There we go. Anything to add, or happy with that one?
I mean, I've just done this kind of thing where I've tried to, you know, use progressive Gaussian blur and some judicious masking to try to create a progressive bokeh, and I've just never had much luck doing it and not having even the slightest bit of a halo. It just always ends up because even if you cut out the object you want to be sharp and place that over on its own layer, you know, what you're blurring in the background still has part of that object in it. And when you blur it, the more you blur it, the more of that halo you see around it. So I'll just be honest. I can't think of any easy way to do it.
No,
besides maybe going in and like trying to paint more, you know, clone some more of the background object, you know, around it. And then when you blur it, you know, I don't know how you do it easy. I think it's just hard.
The extract tool does a good job, but the extract tool can be a bit of a pain in the ass with hair. That's all. But anything that's not here, Extract works quite well. I've just had a tweet from Carl. He says he's still out delivering. I've been watching you two on my iPad while I've been driving.
not safe.
He said it's like watching the Twilight Zone version of Worlds Apart. Thank you. number one, dude, stop watching your iPad while you're frigging driving.
Yeah.
This podcast and all the others in the network would not be possible without UK2.net. They are the fabulous people that keep us afloat, and we love them to bits. We've got some new codes for you, and this is where it gets complicated.
Pay attention.
Yeah, you do need to pay attention, because there's lots of these. We're going to have to put some up on the website somehow. But so we got these through literally the day before yesterday. That's why we've not done anything on the website. But there's a whole pile of stuff you can do. And these codes work in multiple junks. So if you put more than one code in, you'll still get both of the deductions potentially. So British Tech DNS, all one word, is going to give you free DNS management for 2 years. So that's sorted. Brilliant. Well done.
Free.
Zero. British Tech Domains is going to get you 20% off any domain registration that you put in instantly, and that could be a good sizable chunk. Previously, you only got 15% on that one, so there's a big winner. Thank you, UK2. British Tech VPN, this is a great one. 50% off your first month of any VPN service that they offer. That could be a sizable chunk of money as well as. British Tech Server gets you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length, but you've got to do that as an online deal only. There's nothing else associated with that. You can't do it via ringing up and doing it through the telephone sales. And finally, British Tech VPS gets you the first month free when you purchase an entry-level VPS service, or the same amount above £8.95.
So if that's you put, virtual private server.
Yeah, if you put VPS in, they'll give you $8.95 off or a higher amount up to first month free, depending on how big the VPS server is. If you go to their page for VPS servers, there's a great little slider on there that you can start to figure out, you know, what kind of data and bandwidth you want versus storage, and it'll as you move the two sliders up and down, the price will change to show you what that package works out at. So loads of codes there. We're going to stick them up. British Tech DNS, British Tech Domains, British Tech VPN, and British Tech Server, and then British Tech VPS. We'll all put those up on the website this weekend, and you'll be able to get to them. So thank you, UK2. Absolutely stunning provider, and we would be lost without you. So we're very grateful. We're done. Where can we get it? Go on.
Whatever happened to UK1? Did they just...
Yeah, that's a good point. Where's UK2?
They just got swallowed by UK2.
There we go. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Chris, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
As you mentioned earlier, I am a contributing writer at Ars Technica, so you can find my excellent, award-winning, Pulitzer Prize-winning writing.
Have you really got an award?
No, I wish.
Yeah, you. Yeah.
I deserve one. But ArsTechnica.com, so you can find me there, as well as all my other excellent coworkers, and I'm also on the Twitters at Forsmack, and I've been told by my old art teacher that I tweet too much.
Okie doke. Why on earth does your old art teacher think you tweet too much? What business is it of he or she?
Well, it's rather complicated, but I have all my tweets sent to my Facebook page, and she is recently retired, so she's on the Facebook all the time, right? It's like, I don't understand what's going on. You tweet, there's too many updates, and I don't understand what you're talking about.
Did you have one of those unhealthy relationships with your art teacher, mate? Was it? Why, she follows you still? She's stalking you? No.
I mean, I'm from a pretty small town in Indiana.
You and the bad father. So you did have an inappropriate relationship with her?
No. I wouldn't call it inappropriate at all, but I'm just saying the art community is very tight-knit. So, you know, even once I was out of high school and I was, you know, I worked at the local art museum and taught classes there.
You were fair game. No?
the point is, you know...
Was she hot, Chris?
What I was saying is we're all friends. What? You know, we keep in touch. There aren't that many artists, so we kind of stick together as far as, you know, putting on shows and things of that nature, of an artistic nature. not of any other kind of nature, inappropriate or otherwise.
The chat room's telling you, Chris, you aren't going to win this one. Stop digging, dude. Just let it go. So yeah, that was it. Me and the art teacher. Mm-mm.
I never got busy with my art teacher, if that makes anyone happy.
You still do it, dude. Leave it alone.
Just saying.
Just saying.
I'm just saying.
We're going to be back again next week with the first show as normal. Hopefully, those two lazy bastards, Fox and Madden, will be here to take their toll on the network and do what they're supposed to, and not watching the show whilst driving. He's just sent me another tweet saying, can you email me the new code so I can put them in for Worlds Apart? Like, it's just...
I'm just going to come around and say it. I think this show's better with just the two of us.
I think it is. I think Madden and Fox should just bugger off and leave us to it, mate. But the two pros work here. See you next week. Thanks for listening.